Thank you for coming to my website. This is Pastor John. So glad that you can take a little time and come by. It's been a while since I've put up a clip, since I've done a blog, talk radio, since I've done anything. Just taking a break. All is well with me. I'm still going through what I have to go through, but that's neither here nor there. I just got to share something with you. You know, I was getting so discouraged. I was thinking to myself all the time, where's the young black man that got a heart for God, wants to do what I'm doing with a passion? You're kidding me. I've been looking for that creature, trying to find him, and it is almost impossible to find him. Well, I upgraded my phone the other day, one of my cell phones, because I'll be cutting off the ministry phone and my home phone number. I'm just going to have one phone, and I'll give it to you folks when you want to reach me. I'm just, everything is being moved down, saving money. But I met this guy in the phone store, and he'll probably be listening to this, so I won't say too much, but it was really encouraging to meet someone else that went to the grad school that I went to, that's majoring in basically same thing that I was majoring in and that I went to school for, 29 years old, and wants to be a Christian apologist on the level that I am, and wants to get serious about that. Working on his master's right now in the same school that I attended. So that is always exciting. I met him while he was turning my phone over, and I hope to talk with him again. Also, the summer is coming up, and I really trust that you all will have a great summer. I'm ending up the semester. One more day to go to school so these students can wrap it all up. Some of them are faring very poorly, and I gave them another opportunity to come on, get the paper in, get it in. Let's boost the grade up. I give the students a chance. I'm not like most professors. If you don't get it in during my deadline, then that's it. I'm not going to give you an opportunity, especially if they have other classes where those classes are pressuring them. And I must say that I was very, very pleased with most of my Philosophy 1 students that's been with me the whole semester. They did excellent on some of their work. Yet I got quite a number of fails and D's because some people just don't do anything. And some people do everything. What is going on out there? I don't know. I haven't been following the news on what's going out there in terms of the church. My views haven't changed. I don't put much credibility in church people, because if there is a primary objective of money behind why a churchman or a churchwoman in that sense is in ministry, they've already been polluted. That God is nowhere surrounded when there is a rush for money. As a matter of fact, a friend of mine called me. Well, yeah, he's a friend. I don't want him to be my friend anymore, but I can't stop him from being my friend. The guy keeps calling me. The guy keeps calling me, and he sent it. That's not right. He sent me a sermon outline, and he wants me to check it out. I told the gentleman that I did not want to have anything to do with him, that I don't care, but he will not leave me alone. So I guess I have this question for those of you that listen to me. Should I, because I believe that what he's doing in his church is extremely wrong? I love the guy. See, my problem is that if I love the guy, I'll hang out with him. I don't have to love what he does, but I'll hang out with the preacher because I love him. He's a friend of mine. And that's the way I do love. If I love you, I'm not going to let what you do stop me from appreciating who and what you are. But I don't know. I'm kind of tied up on that, because when people feel the way they do negatively about me, I would rather that they would have nothing to do with me. He doesn't feel negative about me. I feel negative about him going through that. I'm getting ready. As a matter of fact, there's a minister that I know. I understood today that this minister is 98 years old and he has a preaching staff on his staff, and he wants me to teach them homiletics. That's exciting. Getting ready to do that. Hold on one second. Let's see who this is. Hold on. I'm not even going to stop the cast. Hello? Well, there you have it. You know, if it's ever a delay when somebody calls you, trust me, it's an advertisement. That's all it is. Somebody doesn't know what they want. What do you guys want to hear? I'd like you to email me. What do you, you know, I've really have exhausted the topics that I want to talk about. I think I almost have everything up on my website that should be addressed. You can go to the extra sound page and pick up older clips, full clips, partial clips. It's all up there for you. I think I've said it all. Who was it? Eddie Long's not going to jail. He's not being prosecuted. Those young men got what they want. Everybody's happy. It's about money. Well, maybe that was somebody that wanted to talk with me. Let's see if this is true. Yeah, what's up?
Hey, sir.
Hi, how are you?
I'm good. You going to be home after I
get off at 7? Yeah, you know, I was by your house, and so I just got home about 30 minutes ago. Sure, I'll be here. Yeah, and then I got two more pieces to give you, too. So, yeah, I'll be here. About what time are you thinking?
I get off at 7, so I'll be around for 7:30. Oh, no, you got class tonight. No,
I don't have class tonight, but my son-in-law asked me to go out with him and have dinner with him tonight. And so I'll probably be out at that time, but can I leave something for you and have you leave something for me?
Yeah.
Okay, I'll handle it that way.
Okay, sounds good. Well, enjoy yourself. I'll make suitable proficiency.
Okay, I appreciate it, Garland. Thank you, my brother.
You know what? I just remembered that I had to have Gloria go to the bank. She's got the switch from it. I was late getting to work. So I'm going to have to catch you on tomorrow.
Okay. Okay, catch me on tomorrow. That's better.
Okay. All right. I'll be by then.
All right. Thanks, Garland. All right. Bye-bye. Now, there was a talk with the pastor and his administrative elder. There it is. He wants to pay me. Can't catch up with me. So, you know, pay me if you... whatever. You see, because whenever it comes to monies and things like that for what I do in ministry, and I don't really feel that I've been doing enough like I should do, I'm looking for a replacement to take over for me to do this. I'm 67. I'm getting, you know what it is, people? Can I really be transparent with you? I'm getting tired. I'm tired. I'm getting more aches and pains in my body. I'm weary. And everybody looks at John Coleman and they think that John Coleman has 10 tons of energy, but I'm not. And I'm not perturbed or perplexed, though I'm a little frustrated because I can't find anybody that wants to take over all this stuff. I mean, the whole studio, everything, just every clip that I've ever done, all the work that I've ever done, take it. I want to give it to them, but they have to do something for God. That's the dilemma that I have, ladies and gentlemen. I have this dilemma. Ain't nobody doing anything good for God. Man, I wonder how many... What's happened to my Blog Talk Radio? I don't even ever go there anymore. What does that look like nowadays? I have Blog Talk Radio, but I haven't done a Blog Talk Radio in so long. I've almost forgotten it. I'm just going on Blog Talk Radio right now. And
Gee whiz, the last one that I did was Ideas and Perceptions. I've really got to step it up.
So, well, I have dinner with my son-in-law tonight, and then maybe I'll get busy on that a little bit. My goodness, people, right? It's summertime in Los Angeles, about 71, 72 degrees, sunny, no smog in the air, just perfect weather. People riding their bikes up and down the street. I see it from the window of the Lucy Coleman studio. I had to give the first round of finals. Oh, and ethics and philosophy won. Then I'm starting on philosophy of religion. If any of you are interested in taking philosophy with Pastor John, for the first time I'm teaching philosophy of world religions at Harbor College next semester. I'm grateful for the opportunity to teach Barbara's class, and I got this great book on world religions, and I'm just going to start going through it this weekend. That's what I want to do. I want to start taking time to read, to work on my syllabi, and get all that stuff together because, you know, well, the school is demanding that you do proper work like that, so I have to do that. Health-wise, folks, I'm doing okay. You know, I still got to go in for my treatment. I think 30th of June is when I go in for that, but I'm still doing pretty good. No problems. I just have to be very careful. All right, this one I want to talk about is God is my witness. As God is my witness, I would love to read a paper to you. One of my students wrote a paper. I'm gonna try to reach for the paper. Oh, I like this new mic. I can shift it around in the office, and I won't lose too much volume. She wrote a paper, and it was a final exam, and she read it to me. And I found it interesting as she read this paper to me, because her question was a question that addressed the issue if she did not believe in God. And she gave, and she took Philosophy 1 with me. This class is where we discuss God. We discuss St. Thomas Aquinas' 5 ways to know God. We look at the teleological argument and all that. Anyhow, she gave as her presentation. I'm looking for the paper now. You know I want it because that'd be the perfect thing that I could develop a webcast with. Ah, here it is. Let me see if I can find it. I'd like to read the paper to you that are Christians. I'd like to read the paper to you, and I'd like to know how you'd answer her. I think it's an extraordinary paper, really. Here it is. This is the paper right here. And I won't give her name, of course, because it's not important to give her name. She doesn't even know that I'm going to read it. The students had to do a final paper where they worked their way out of the Hegelian dialectic. Believing something that is unbelievable. She had to convince me that if she wanted to collect her family's inheritance, well, the family said that she has to show her belief in God the way that they believe it. But her thesis was that she was an atheist. She could never believe in God. Now, that's what the writing was about, because what I teach the student to do, I teach the student to argue for their thesis in the dialectic without making mistakes like some people do. Let me read the article to you, and I'm going to pause as I read this and share some things, because I thought it was a very interesting article, very nicely written. When I was a small child, I believed in Santa Claus and the Tooth Fairy without a doubt in my mind, this lady says. As I was growing up, I found out that my parents and kindergarten teacher planted that idea in my head in order to have me look forward to Christmas and to make it seem like losing a tooth was a good thing. I wonder why everyone played along with this imaginary idea if they knew that I would one day find out the truth and be disappointed. Now she's giving me her thesis. She's saying, This applies to the God idea because families pass down their beliefs without questioning why they even believe in something that was forced on them by others, just like Catholicism was forced on the indigenous people by the Spaniards. When, with this being said, she says, I am convinced that the God idea is valid because it resembles the false ideas that one is made to believe while growing up. Now, let me address this. And see, I found that a very powerful statement from this, and I might add, a very beautiful young lady, just fine as she can be. And of course, I'd never tell her that, but she's just fine. But she raises a very important thing. Then she says, as one of the 10 philosophy commandments says, doubt every claim you encounter until the evidence convinces you of its truth. That is right out of one of the philosophy texts that I used a number of years ago that I use in all my Philosophy 1 classes. Doubt every claim you encounter. I do. Until the evidence convinces you of the truth. Now, her article here is writing against the belief in God. I want you to listen to me. Don't be trying to use a bunch of scripture and all that kind of stuff, because thus far, it makes sense. Listen. Self-realization. Now, she's writing about self-realization because you had to use Dean Goetscher's flow chart to write the paper. Self-realization. I have not yet been convinced that the God idea is true or even real because it is not rational for people to believe in something that no one can prove exists. She's right again. You can't prove that God exists. You can't prove that there's a heaven after death because ain't nobody never came back and told you that there is but Jesus. Nobody else. So either Jesus was telling the truth or he was a lunatic. And why would you believe that? All right. Jesus said, in my Father's house, I got to give you the scripture. Jesus said, in my Father's house, there are many mansions. Listen, I go to prepare a place for you. And if I go to prepare a place for you, I'm going to come back and receive you unto myself. Right. That's what Jesus says. Right. Right. Now, how do you know that's true? Because it's in the Bible. Who wrote it? What do you know about canonicity? What do you know about how the Bible came together? What do you know about the doctrine of inspiration, illumination? What do you know about that? Obviously, this young lady knows nothing. She's just operating off of the top of her cerebral cortex. But let me continue to read this as you battle in your mind to try to figure out how in the heck you would answer her if you had an opportunity. Self-realization. She says, I have yet been convinced that the God idea is true. I have not yet been convinced that the God idea is true or real because it is not rational for people to believe in something that they cannot prove exists. During one of the many lectures in class, my eyes was open after hearing that mostly everyone accepts beliefs that were taught while growing up without questioning reality because it applied to me the way that I had accepted things without questioning any of the ideas. Now, you guys got to keep in mind that as a pastor and as a secular philosophy professor and as a Christian apologist, I must teach the class honestly. I'm not going in that classroom telling them that God exists, and if you don't believe in that, you're going to hell. I'm not going in there doing that. If you expect me to do something like that, first of all, that's educationally suicide, and it's ignorant. How dare you make a claim of anyone's eternal destination because they don't believe what you believe? Only stupid people do that. That's why I think that when your pastors tell you to go out and witness to 10 people and bring them to church, the pimp is just trying to stack his portfolio. You know that. Okay, after I thought about the God idea, she says, I decided that it's not a valid idea because God is not tangible. The idea that God lives through people's imaginations. Now, here's where the writing gets a little difficult because she says that God is not tangible. God's not tangible because obviously she cannot realize or see who God is because God has not revealed himself to her. As a matter of fact, after she read the paper, I pointed out to her, I says, well, what are you going to do with me? She said, what do you mean, Professor Coleman? I said, well, what are you going to do with me? In August of 1967, I had an a priori experience, not an a posteriori, but an a priori experience, man. I'm telling you, Christ revealed himself to me. No, he didn't have blonde hair and blue eyes. No, he did not. He didn't have anything like that. But he appeared to me, not in a vision, not in a dream, but in reality, my friends. God appeared to me and communicated with my soul. I'm not playing, people. I wasn't drunk. I wasn't loaded. What did I need? I needed that to take place. I tell you the truth, because if that had never taken place in my life, I believe I'd be dead now or dying of disease from some sexually transmitted disease, because I love to have sex. I just love it. And I believe of all things, that's why God called me, because he knew that I would be a good preacher for him and obey what he told me to obey. And he knew that if I got carried away in a lifestyle like a lot of these people are carried away in today, that I'd be dead. And Pastor John would not be this African-American pastor talking about and reading a philosophy paper about tangible belief in God. It's not a tangible idea to her. The idea that God lives through people's imaginations is what she says. No one has ever had a conversation with God or met him, she says. Her or it, that's what she calls God. So I can confirm that those who do believe in God believe in the irrational idea. Well, I told her after I got the paper, I met him. I communicated with him. You can call me crazy all you want to. I'm not going to argue with you. I don't have to prove anything to you. See, because when you have an a posteriori experience, you know that you experienced it. Now, some of you listen to me. The unfortunate thing is that you're calling yourself a Christian because your family were Christian. You're not really a Christian. I'm talking about serious Christianity here. Serious Christianity. Not a kind of a serious Christianity where you never sin, where you never break any of the commandments of God, whether it's Old Testament, New Testament, anything, whether you're living right or living wrong. I'm not talking about that. Then she gives me thesis again. She says, most people who do believe in God look to he or she for help and as an easy answer to life's hardest problems. No, I don't do that. I actually honestly don't believe that I am into God because I want him to make my life better so I won't experience heartache and misfortune and stuff like that. As a matter of fact, I was on the way to work this morning and I was praying. I was on the way to the college. And I was praying and I thought about my debauchery and how fleshly I am, and I just started to cry. I always do that. When I talk to my Father in heaven, I'm real with him. It's like I'm butt naked, laying out on the couch, just talking. Hey, I'm keeping it graphic for you because I want God to know my heart. See, here's the key, and I want to share this with you Christians. I've been silent about this for a couple of weeks, and I hope that those of you that like listening to me are listening to this because you can kind of like key in on what I'm trying to tell you. Don't worry, I'm going to get to the men's discussions. Man, black men have problems. I'm telling you, they got problems. I won't go into the detail too much, but I was speaking with a black man last night and he got huffy and puffy at me. Two black men got huffy and puffy at me because I told him, you don't know what the hell is you talking about. This young generation knows nothing. Trust me, man, absolutely nothing. Oh, I got a new cell phone. They'll show me how to get that sucker to work. They'll Twitter, tweak, and do all that stuff. But when it comes to, that's another story altogether. So let me answer this and says right here. I don't look to God for help in a time of need. I don't have God as a cosmic bellhop to come to meet my particular need. Oh, I get sick. Oh, I got to call on God. Please, God, don't let me get sick and die. You know, I have to go in for this little treatment for my bladder. And if I die on the table, because they have to put me under. And if I die on the table, let it be said, let it be done. It's good. Man, I'm not worrying about staying here. As a matter of fact, when you ever meet a real Christian, and a real Christian, just like some damnable heathen sinners, are not afraid to die. And I know some sinners that are not afraid to die. They don't believe in no hell and nothing afterwards, but they're definitely not afraid to die. So no, I'm not one of these persons that latched on to God because I'm afraid that I'm going to die. Then she goes on and says, there are some people who pray to God to get out of a bad situation that they are in, and once there are no positive results or reoccurring catastrophes, when that reoccurs, they ask God, why me? I don't do that either. I don't know what kind of mess that is. Matter of fact, most of the difficulties that people asking God to get them out of, they got into it. If God didn't help them get into it, why are they calling him to get them out? You understand what I'm saying? No, I don't do that either. So in case she listens to this, maybe she'll hear this. She got an A in the class, I believe, too. This is an excellent paper. And then she says, and that is irrational because they should depend upon themselves for results, not someone that is real in one's imagination. Now, she has a point. I've been telling, that's why I got into an argument last night. I was telling a young man, I said, I'm going to tell this other man to look at himself and find his way and stop looking to you. Young man got living. I said, I don't believe in looking to nobody to find my way. I want to share something with you people. If you look into your pastor, if you look into your church, if you look into anyone else to define who you are other than God, you are out of your mind. And please don't try to get with the Christian group and fellowship, you know, holding hands and telling them what all your sins are when you're in this circle. Please don't get me involved in that madness. Mm-mm. Don't say again, because I never did that. I went to a fellowship with the nincompoops did it. And I used to get in the little prayer circle. I told you about that. And they would hold hands. And now each of you start talking and tell us what we need to be prayerful for you about. When they got to me, I said, I'm not going to tell you about what I do, man. What you want to hear? I masturbate or something? Huh? What you want to hear about me? You need to straighten up that mess in your own life and get your own mind straight. That's what I told him. I'm the pastor of the church, the associate pastor. David said, I think that you should be an example. I said, you don't tell me. I told him, I'm not concerned about what you think, brother. I don't need to spill my guts before these people. Because if I told them what I was doing, it would literally blow their minds. God is the only one that I can tell that to. That's why this morning on the way to work, what did I do? And I began to weep. I like the way Jesus put it. He says, when you do your alms, go in your closet. Now, he didn't mean that literally. He said to keep that mess a secret. Don't be listening to these fools in these churches telling you to spread your sins to them. Because trust me, if they black folk, and I know black folk, your mess going to be all over Dodge. White folk too, any kind of folk. I know people like that. So, a good example would be, as I continue to read this, a good example would be if a couple was not able to reproduce. Oh my goodness, who can this be calling me on the ministry phone? Thank you for calling.
Hello, Mr. Coleman?
Yes. Yes.
Hello, Mr. Coleman?
Yes. Yes. What? See? Here's one of those advertising. Did you hear all that racket in the background? Trying to sell something. I thought it was somebody, because that's why I'm going to get the ministry line cut off, and I'm going to get one line, and that line is going to be on my private cell phone. That's going to be my private house phone cell phone, because I don't, you know, the boys were ribbing me last night. They're saying you're not getting too many calls. I said, absolutely. So why should I have all these phone lines? I only need one phone line in my house. And let me say this. When you're young, you get a lot of calls. But when you get older and your message has been well received and well heard, you don't get too many other calls. Young people have a tendency to want something fresh. Well, what I'm giving out is some 2,000-year-old mandate, man. It ain't fresh. It ain't new. It's old. And it's antiquated objectivity. Something that people in our society really does not want to pay too much attention to. But that is who I am. And so that is what I do. Now, let me continue. It is a good paper. It is. A good example. I read that already. All right. Another example would be if someone is battling for their life because they have cancer and they pray to God to keep them alive and help them get through hard times when their so-called God has nothing to do with them living or dying. Their body is what has to fight the cancer, and there is nothing that a prayer can do to help them through the struggle. Now, let me answer this. I really liked her statement here because she raises a very important point. Okay, you're going to call on God, and God knows that you're going to get cancer. That's why, you know, I told somebody the other day, I said, when I have my procedure, if I get on the table and don't wake up, that wouldn't bother me. And they said, oh, nothing's going to happen to you. I said, you don't know that. Oh, God wouldn't let that happen. I said, why not? Why wouldn't people die on the operating table all the time? Doctors make mistakes. The people to give you the medicine make mistakes. Or you just get in shock while you under the blade unconscious and your heart stops beating. They look up that sucker, go deep, deep, and they'd say, hey, revive. No, you're a Christian. You're supposed to be ready to die. Anyhow, I have the hiccups, so don't pay me any attention. You're a Christian. You're supposed to be ready to die. What's the problem? That's what I'm looking at. So I disagree with her here. Faulty premise. The true person that believes in God doesn't care about him having cancer. That's their lot. Now, when they go to church, oh, Lord, heal me of my cancer. You know what? If God gave it to me, and if he hasn't removed it, why should I ask him to heal me? Why? Should I tell him because I can get more work done for him? I could have gotten more work done for the Lord a couple of weeks ago, but I've been taking a hiatus. And I don't feel very good about that. But like I said, I'm tired. I'm aching. I'm paining. I'm frustrated. And the reason why I'm frustrated, I told you. I really don't think that the message is conducive to people in this country. I really don't. There's very few of us that really love God. And the rest of us, trust me, not very inclined, not at all, to follow God. I have to put it. For those of you that tuned in for the first time, you tuned in to, you came to the website, this is Pastor John's website, and this is what I would call a webcast. I'm not rambling on. I'm leading up to something. PGA always leads up to something, but he does not lead up to things in the way that the average preacher leads up to it. There's not going to be a money ploy. It's not going to try to tell you to come to my home from a church fellowship. Don't want you to come and visit me. Don't want you to send me anything. I want you to learn something. I want you to learn something. And the main big idea that I want you to learn is when persons like this make a statement, don't try to tell them that they're wrong and try to quote Bible verses to them. All right, continue to listen. People use religion as a way of escape for their fears. She's right. Such as when someone is afraid to die, but they know that it is coming. Didn't I just say that? I know the death is coming. Why would I be afraid? Here's a woman that is not a Christian, not a professing Christian, but understands I know some of you are thinking about, but what's going to happen to her after death? That all depends upon the church you go to. Basically, listen, such as when someone is afraid to die, they know it's coming. Then they pray to God that they will go to heaven, when in reality, no one can really say if heaven or hell really exists, because no one has seen it or been there and came back. Now, of course, the Christian answer is Jesus did and all that, and people going up to heaven in fiery chariots and things like that. There's an interesting introduction to a Seal number on his album called Commitment, where he's talking about if you're looking for some man to fall out of the sky. I guess he was speaking rhetorically of the resurrection that we Christians pay homage to. I laugh every time I listen to it. But that's Seal. Just as no one has ever seen God, this writer says, how can they prove that he or she really exists? In class, I was taught that if one does not know what they're listening to, one is open to deception, which is why I decided not to listen to irrational ideas. See, this person is telling us Christians, I'm not even going to listen to your irrational answers. Can you give her a rational answer? That's why I'm doing this webcast. She says, although I don't believe that God is a tangible person or object, St. Thomas Aquinas has five ways to prove that God is a causation of existence. Now, this proves that she's been listening to Pastor Coleman as he plays the professor. Yes. In his second way, he says, and she quotes, there cannot be an endless string of objects causing other objects to exist. Therefore, there must be an uncaused, first caused, called God. Do you understand that, Christian? If you understand the cosmological argument of St. Thomas Aquinas, by the way, a Catholic, but they were the brilliant minds and the thinkers back in the day. Can't say that much about the Protestant church. She goes on in her article and says that this philosopher makes sense when he talks about the uncaused first, because in order for something to happen, there has to be something who made the first thing move. And God would be the first move to start off the existence of mankind, all and all that is alive. Just as a soccer player kicks a ball and makes it travel across the soccer field, and without the soccer player kicking the ball would have just stayed in the same spot that it was always at. A better example, she says, would be the manufacturer who made the material, who had the material to make a soccer ball. The teleological argument proceeds with the conclusion that there must first be probably a divine intelligence, a supreme designer, to account for the observed or perceived intelligent purpose or order. And that's a quote right out of the classroom, man. Some of these students are getting it. During the class lecture, it was said that God exists in one's mind. That's right. So even if someone were to tell you that God doesn't exist, it would not matter, because if you believe them, others believe in others' opinions, it does not matter. I agree with the young lady on that. I'll listen to your opinion, as stupid as it sounds, and tell you what I think of it and why. Therefore, she says, it can be an a posteriori experience, because one can believe in God from a personal experience, or God can be worshipped from an a priori experience, which means we cannot depend upon our human experience in order to know what is real. No, you can depend upon your human experience to know what's real. You just have to be able to define it. Then she goes on and says, although St. Thomas Aquinas and the teleological argument says that God is the causation of existence, philosopher Hegel states that the only thing that there is rational. So you see, that's why, man, you hear Broman snoring in the background, don't you? Therefore, the article goes on, therefore, the God idea is not valid because it is rational to worship to something or someone that isn't tangible. But I would say he is. And all the myriads of people that have come in contact with him knows that he's tangible. See, Bible says that if our gospel is hid, it is hid to those who are perishing and who the God of this world hath blinded their minds, unless they believe the light of the glorious gospel of Christ, and that light should shine unto them. If a person doesn't have that kind of light and doesn't know what I'm talking about, I'm sorry. This was a good paper. Let me finish the article for you. Although St. Thomas, the teleological argument, say that God is the causation of existence, Hegel states that the one thing real is rational. Therefore, the God idea is not valid because it is rational to worship something or someone that isn't tangible. But he is tangible. He's just not revealed to her. Now, the inevitable question is, church, how do you get this intangible God to reveal himself to be tangible to her? That's where the church comes in. That's where the church comes in. Now, she goes on and says, even though people have talked about the gods for centuries, it doesn't mean that they exist. For example, the Greek people worship Zeus and many other gods, and they never existed. Another god that does not exist is the Hindu god that has six arms. It's physically impossible to have that many arms, proving my point that people have their ideas on what their God looks like, but it does not mean that their God exists, which proves that gods exist in people's imagination, she says, and not in tangible reality. That's not true. I'm not just imagining. Imagine the world without weapons, without bullets to go in the head. No, I'm not. I don't want to imagine that. That's late John Lennon. Don't want to do that. But he says that people's imagination does not give tangible reality, which he says proves that the God idea is not valid. Most Catholics and Christians, this writer says, go to church to worship God. In the church, when a lot of priests take advantage of people, well, I don't know why she hit on that. And yeah, when is this next? So let me finish this up. She says that a good example about the movie that we watched in class called The Mission, because the priest in this movie that went to try to convert the indigenous people into Catholics by saying that God told them that this is what he wanted. And then she says, as I have said before, I do not think that the God idea is valid because people just try to find something to help them cope with their problems. Then she says that I believe that the idea of God was made up to help people deal with the idea that when they die, they will go somewhere heavenly. And that if they commit crimes and do unethical things, then they will go to hell. And most people have not even questioned if the idea of God was made by governments to make people follow rules and to tell society what is right and wrong. With that being said, she ends up and says, anybody can follow the ideas and not even know why they believe that they should worship someone that they have never seen, touched, or heard, or spoke. I like the article, but she ends up on a very weak point because the person that is touched by God and moved by God knows it beyond a shadow of a doubt. But what would you answer a person like that? What would you, you know, love to hear some of your answers. She obviously doesn't believe in God. Her family does. She doesn't. And she gave some adequate reasons why she doesn't. That's her thesis. And so she's saying to the Christians, stand up and deliver something here. You know, are you afraid to die because you don't want to die?
It's sad.
When you really think about it. You really think about it. She has a point. But thank you. If you get a chance to listen to your professor, I look forward to showing up there on Monday, ending up with a few more exams for the peoples. You're listening to Pastor John here live in the Lucy Coleman studio in Los Angeles, California. A beautiful day here in Los Angeles. And glad that you can join me.
Well, I think I'm going to stop right there. It's about 45 minutes, and that should be it. Thank you so much.
Let me know what you think about this webcast.